falling, for a single slip might cause irreparable harm. The three men were halfway back to the main camp, jolting over the rough road in the expedition's battered jeep, when Davis raised the question that had been intriguing the younger men ever since the work had begun. "I'm getting a distinct impression," he said, "that our neighbors down the valley don't like us, though I can't imagine why. We're not interfering with them, and they might at least have the decency to invite us over." "Unless, of course, it's a war research plant," added Barton, voicing a generally accepted theory. "I don't think so," said Professor Fowler mildly, "because it so happens that I've just had an invitation myself. I'm going there tomorrow." If his bombshell failed to have the expected result, it was thanks to his staff's efficient espionage system. For a moment, Davis pondered over this confirmation of his suspicions, then he continued with a slight cough. "No one else has been invited, then?" The professor smiled at his pointed hint. "No," he said. "It's a strictly personal invitation. I know you boys are dying of curiosity, but frankly, I don't know any more about the place than you do. If I learn anything tomorrow, I'll tell you about it, but at least we found out who's running the establishment." His assistants pricked up their ears. Who is it?" asked Barton. "My guess was the Atomic Development Authority." "You may be right," said the professor. "At any rate, Henderson and Barnes are in charge." This time, the bomb exploded effectively, so much so that Davis nearly drove the jeep off the road. Not that that made much difference, the road being what it was. "Henderson and Barnes? In this godforsaken hole?" "That's right," said the professor gaily. "The invitation was actually from Barnes. He apologized for not contacting us before, made the usual excuses, and wondered if I could drop in for a chat." "Did he say what they're doing?" "No, not a hint." "Barnes and Henderson," said Barton thoughtfully. "I don't know much about them except that they're physicists. What's their particular racket?" "They're the experts on low-temperature physics," answered Davis. "Henderson was director of the Cavendish for years. He wrote a lot of letters to Nature not so long ago. If I remember rightly, they were all about helium-2. Barton, who didn't like physicists, and said so whenever possible, was not impressed. "I don't even know what helium-2 is," he said smugly. "What's more, I'm not at all sure that I want to." This was intended for Davis, who had once taken a physics degree in, as he explained, a moment of weakness. The moment had lasted for several years before he had drifted into geology by rather devious routes, and he was always harking back to his first love. It's a form of liquid helium that only exists at a few degrees above absolute zero. It's got the most extraordinary properties, but, as far as I can see, none of them can explain the presence of two leading physicists in this corner of the globe. They had now arrived at the camp, and Davis brought the jeep to its normal crash halt in the parking space. He shook his head in annoyance as he bumped into the truck ahead with slightly more violence than usual. "These tires are nearly through. Have the new ones come yet?" "Arrived in the copter this morning, with a despairing note from Andrews, hoping that you'd make them last a full fortnight this time." "Good. I'll get them fitted this evening." The professor had been walking a little ahead. Now he dropped back to join his assistants. "You needn't have hurried, Jim," he said glumly. "It's corned beef again." It would be most unfair to say that Barton and Davis did less work because the professor was away. They probably worked a good deal harder than usual, since the native laborers required twice as much supervision in the chief's absence. But there was no doubt that they managed to find time for a considerable amount of extra talking.